drive faster in a little lay-by than you do on roads. There you go.
That's because I was accelerating to join the traffic flow. It's nice to get out of town, isn't it? Wait.
Not really. But being it's basically torture wherever you go. Here there's nothing interesting to see. There's no interesting cars to see. I think this is perhaps slightly the benefit of living in town. Is occasionally you see something interesting on the roads. Here we're just driving past product. You can pass by any number of BMWs, Mercedes, VWs, Audis, all look the same. Obviously all look the same.
You've been trying to car spot now for what is an hour and a half, nearly an hour and a bit. We've been driving, and you've been trying to find something that caught your eye and made you go whoa, and now you're bemoaning the fact that you haven't found anything at all apart from maybe the Jaguar.
I think that you know this in my mind. I've got this. We've reset back to the 70s. We've reset back to the 70s in terms of economy and dreariness, and I guess every generation.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I guess every generation
hero of the pop charts.
Well, every generation has a grumpy old man syndrome too, and everyone complains. All the cars look the same. All the cars. If you went back 10 years.
So you're now in that. Are you?
I'm in that zone you're where everything zone. Looks the same. Nothing looks interesting. Yeah. Yeah? And the most interesting thing that we saw up till now, in the last maybe hour and a half, 2 hours of driving, was the XJS.
Yeah.
Now, whereas it's not a particularly interesting car, that's probably the most interesting. It still looks like a car. Everything else looks like a product, and it's designed like a product. It's just very sad. This is no wonder people like you run looking for 30-year-old cars that aren't particularly that great, but they feel brilliant.
No.
There's nothing. Look. There's nothing overly special about the car that you're driving even now. What makes it special is the memories that it comes with. One thing I do find special is that you can get inside this BMW and it still smells the same plastic for some reason. Doesn't matter how much you wash it.
It's a time warp machine.
It's a time warp machine. Yeah. But
to be honest, it's more than that. And let's just touch on that a little bit. This car was an icon of its era. And it was an icon for a number of reasons. And first of all, the build quality on this was amazing, you know, because at the end of the day, they were never expecting to sell as many of these as they actually sold in the end. So there was kind of partly a hand-built process, you know. So, you know, very, very solid, long-lasting build quality, rear-wheel drive, short chassis. So actually, the car was always way better to drive than anybody could have expected, especially at that time. And to be honest, even today, it's just so much fun to drive. So the inherent, you know, the fact that there was the ultimate driving machine, now this is the ultimate podcast machine, but it was always there. And in this car, it was sort of more evident than, in fact, any of the others. And it didn't matter if you had a 316 or 318, this 325, or even an M3. They were all great to drive. Just the steering, the balance, the way they drove, the way they felt, the size of them, the way the controls were set towards you, everything worked. The other thing about this car, of course, it just caught the tidal wave of that whole yuppie movement, right? So during that time, you climbed up that yuppie ladder, and there was kind of an hierarchy, wasn't it? And ultimately, all the yuppies wanted a Porsche 911. They all wanted a 930, 911 Targa. That was the target. And along the way, you started off with a Golf GTI. And that was kind of like, that's where you started. And then when you progressed up that executive ladder, you got yourself an E30. So this E30 was for a lot of people, you know, where they reached and from where they wanted to then aspire to the next level. But for a lot of people, this was the car to have, you know. And I think the problem with that, and this is the other thing that I find about driving this today, I drove it back in the 90s when I had one, and it didn't always get the warmest reception on the road, you know what I mean? You got a few hand gestures that weren't hello, put it that way. But today, it's completely different. Today, you get lots of thumbs ups and smiles and waves and people just saying to you, yeah, nice car, mate, you know, all this sort of stuff.
You're basically saying a different finger or digit on the hand is used.
A completely different digit now. Exactly, yeah. but it's extraordinarily how the car has evolved and morphed and become even more than what it was And, you know, it was always a great car, but it's just something really special.
Yeah, but this is just it. When you say great, I mean, context-wise, there were fewer brands around, fewer choices around. You talk about this yuppie hierarchy of VW Golf, BMW, Mercedes, and the commonality is all German cars. The perception was, which I buy into, German cars were better built, they were slightly, had higher cachet, they were more, you know, it's more stylish. But I still put to you that the nicest thing about this car is, again, it's the context of it. It's not a particularly outstanding car. There's nothing overly special about it. It's just very evocative. But when we used to gawp at cars 30, 40 years ago, it was always because they had some beauty to them. A BMW looked very distinctively distinctively different to a Mercedes.
Yeah.
A Mercedes looked distinctively different
to a
VW.
But also there was, you're talking about gawping at cars, and that's a very good point, because yes, in the 80s and 90s, we wouldn't gawp at a 3 Series, unless it was an M3, which was quite rare.
That's right.
But you would gawp at supercars.
Yeah.
Because there weren't that many around. But, you know, when you look at what's going on now in the market, this, you know, there's a supercar on our road, on my road where I live, there's an Aventador just parked there. You know, three-bed semi-detached, you know, has a Lamborghini Aventador parked in the driveway, you know. And it's become one of those things where all of a sudden it's like, you know, like you said just now, driving this, you know, so far we've been on this journey for about an hour and a bit, and there isn't anything that you've gone, wow, you know. And even if an Aventador drove past, you wouldn't go, wow, you just wouldn't.
I just think, what a knobbin. And the thing is this, that is the fun and magic that has gone out of motoring in general, at least for my journey, at least for me. Maybe I can't speak for my journey, I can speak for myself. I find it interesting, there's nothing interesting. Koenigsegg, yes, why not? Pagani, why not?
But those are like extremely rare.
Yeah,
I mean, it would be something to see those. I mean, those would be quite special if you did see one.
I mean, we were talking earlier, if an F40 went by, an Enzo, right? This would be a moment, this would be an important moment. It's not going to happen. And life has become more banal, more miserable. It's not really worth living.
Oh, well, this is all gone. This is taking a turn from doom and gloom, isn't it? Why?
No, but this is why I said the reset back to the 70s might be interesting. This is why I said it might be interesting. Now, when, at least in my mind, everything has gone back to being plain vanilla, everything, then the extraordinary will feel extraordinary. We might actually have come back to that Countach moment where you spotted, you know, you go into town and you see magic moment, you see Rod Stewart driving past in a red Countach. And you think, wow, super, forget supercar or superstar, super moment. You know what I mean?
But here's the thing, I was saying this earlier about supercars, and that's the thing, it's like, it wasn't just, when you saw a supercar, it wasn't just a supercar. It was the point that whoever the individual was that had that supercar had to be something special.
Yeah.
So immediately you were like, whoa, you know, that guy has done it. That, you know, very rarely that girl has done it, but normally, you know, that would be the case. And it would have to be somebody that you think, okay, you know, that guy has done something special or is something special in order to be having that car. Nowadays, it doesn't feel like that. Nowadays, it feels like, you know, as long as you can afford a good finance package, you can have that car. You know, so it's like, well, you know, is the specialness because of the owner or is the specialness because of the car? You know, as a motoring journalist, I'm like, okay, the specialness should come from the engineering, you know, from the design, from all of the hundreds of millions of dollars that have gone into it, or the thousands of hours that, you know, designers, engineers have spent on developing that car. But is it ultimately our perception and what we see the car, and we see who we see with the car? Because you've been doing this today, you've been looking at cars and then looking at the driver.
Which is putting me off the cars.
Which is then putting you off the cars, yeah.
Because buying a car, I guess, to me, is like buying clothes or buying a suit or a uniform that other people are going to see. You know, you might as well be cushy and comfortable and enjoying yourself on the inside, but at the end of the day, it does have an exterior. There's no, you know, if we were not that worried about looks, all cars would be the same color. We choose I don't know why people actually buy a car. If I buy a car, it's not always based on practicality. In fact, it's very rarely based on practicality. It's based on what makes me feel good, internally and externally.
To be honest, for a lot of people, it is that. This is what you often hear: "Was I like the color?" You know, it's actually, well, did you look? Did you analyze the practicality? Did you analyze the cost? Did you do? No, I just like the color. You know, and very often for people, it's like, okay, I saw this locally, I could afford it, and I like the color, so I bought it. You know, and that's not exactly a scientific way of doing it.
No, no.
But for a lot of people, that is the way they do it.
Right, and once again. You know, people talk about practicality. Oh, I need four seats. I've got two kids and a wife, or whatever it is. You know, once you've covered those basic things, it's all about what stirs you. And quite honestly, it's not about what stirs you. It's what your financial package can get you into these days. It doesn't. It's that motoring experience has changed.
So going back to your earlier thing that you were saying about, we get back to the 70s, we do about this, the financial package that gets you. And of course now the people are really being impacted by cost of living, and interest rates are also going up, although they're not really affecting car purchasing that much, to be honest, but the perception is there. Do you think that that means that people are actually not going to be doing that anymore, that they're going to be steering away from that? They may just go for the outright, just buy something used, just buy an old banger, for example.
I don't know. I think market, as much as I know, and I don't know a huge amount, like if you look at on Instagram or on Facebook, you'll get no ends of adverts pitching one thing or another thing to you. So I've seen £100,000 cars, for example, like a Porsche Taycan, which if you package it up properly, you can get it for about £599 a month. Okay, I really don't understand. I don't understand the concept, I don't understand the financing. I'm not going to spend too much time thinking about it, right? But that kind of push is making people drive things that they probably couldn't ever afford. And probably they would never buy them if they were using their brains. That's not what they would buy. People are buying purely on what's financially available, and not necessarily based on their personality or their choice, really. And that's weird in itself. That's weird in itself. If I, as in the first year of working after I was a student, I had maybe £3,000 or £4,000 saved up, maybe. But that £3,000 or £4,000 was a delicious treat with which to go out and hunt what car I enjoyed and what I could get for it.
Yeah.
It's a delicious treat, and now it isn't that.
Yeah.
Now those things, to me, don't exist in the same way.
I mean, that was the same. It wasn't a case of what finance I could get. It was a case of how much did I save up.
And then what is it I really
want? Well, to be honest, like when I bought this the first time around, you know, I thought, you know, when I was younger and I was looking at insurance, and I realized, oh, actually, you know, I can afford to insure one. And I looked at how much they were, and I thought, well, if I save up, you know, about £2,000, I could get a 318. Then I was like, oh, if I save up £3,000, I could get a 320, you know. And then as I kept saving money, I got to the point, well, actually, if I go a bit further, if I have a few less lunches and save a bit more money, then I can go for a 325, you know.
Yeah.
So it literally was like that. It was dictated like, how much can I save and then I can get something. Then when I got it, I bought it outright. So that was it. So it wasn't like any finance or anything like that. And then whatever extra, I took the extra money that I had left over. I changed the stereo on it, so put some amps and, you know, stereo and all the rest of it. But yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, I wonder if we're going to be going back to that scenario. Trouble is, it's very difficult now because prices, used and new, are rocketing. I don't know if you saw the other day, I put up a video about the Civic Type R, which is one of the greats.
You said £47,000.
You know, I reviewed the current one, or the previous one, 2 years ago. It was £33,000. £33,000 will get you a Civic Type R. New one, as good as it is, as great as it is,
£47,000. For something made of tin and plastic. It's an absolute piece of shit. Yeah, that happens to go a little bit quickly.
No, right? It's a great car. There's no question about it.
Great. Greatness is subjective. It's not stirring.
Honestly, no. I would own a Civic Type R. I would own one because I've driven this. One of the few cars, modern cars that I've driven in, that I drove it. And every time I drove the last one three times, and every time I drove it, I was like, I want one of those. because that's how good it is. So there's no question that that's a good car. But when you're getting into 47K, it's like, wow, you know, I mean, you're not that far off Mustang money at that point. And you go, well, that's a 5-liter V8. You know, so it's like, wow, it really makes you think. So I think that the fact that the prices are rocketing means that it's becoming less affordable for people to move, you know, to a car that, you know, because you're talking about Banganomics, what good cars can you get for $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, like we could when, you know, when we were younger?
I'm not sure that you can get much more than classic cars, and classic cars that, even classic cars, there's a much, much more intelligent audience out there that know about their classic cars. I guess even younger people know a little bit about classic cars. But as you say, you could buy something for £3,000 or £4,000. There's no way you could do that. It's like I keep talking about my favorite Mercedes, for example, the 560 SEC. I recall 20 years ago, you could buy something for $5,000 or $6,000.
Yeah, easily. Very good one.
Very good one. Try buying it for under $40,000 now.
Yeah.
Or a reasonable one for under $50,000 maybe.
I mean, you could probably get one for $20,000-$25,000, but it will need a bit of work.
It'll need work.
Yeah.
But to me, that is a car, it's not a product. It's a car. Someone's designed it and it has a history to it. And, okay, history is, you can only earn a history, but.
Yeah, but it's got presence, it's got prestige, it's got an elegance to it, it's got a story to it, you know, it's got stories that we can tell about those cars.
No end of BMW can drive, modern BMW can drive quite now, or Mercedes or Audi, it's to a penny. What do you think? Nothing special. Literally, we've been talking for maybe 20, 30 minutes, not one thing of any interest, or even passing interest. Have we encountered nothing? It's really sad.
And there's the thing, it's about perception though, isn't it? Because some of the people that are driving around in their brand new Audis and BMWs and Mercedes are probably thinking, yeah, I have a car, you know? You know, it's point of view, it's perception, isn't it?
I don't know.
I think maybe we're being a little bit harsh, perhaps, you know? I think we're maybe being a little bit too rose-tinted spectacles looking backwards, you know? I mean, the engineering and technology that's going into some of these new cars is absolutely off the scale.
You can't help it. Your biases are always based on the things that stir you. For example, you're a biased journalist.
I'm not a biased journalist.
Well, you are. You have a bias.
We had this argument earlier.
You have a bias.
And I'm like, when I put my journalistic hat on, I am entirely subjective. And also, I have to be in every man's shoes. This is what I have to do. Because I have to just look at a car based on my needs or desires or preferences or wants. I have to assess a car based on what that car is designed to do and who that car is being aimed at. So at that point, you know, there is no level of bias. There's a pure level of objectivity. The only bias in it is trying to give you an idea of the car's personality and character as I perceive it to be. Because ultimately what we're ending up with now, because cars are so good, all cars are so good these days, that the only differentiator is the badge. And you go, right, well, do I relate to that badge? Do I relate to that identity? Does that car suit my personality? So ultimately you end up with that. You know, with everything out there so good, even the cars that are coming in from China, I reviewed the GE Great Wall Motors Aura Funky Cat electric car. It's extraordinary. It's absolutely extraordinary how good that thing is, you know? And it's a ground up, clean sheet, brand new EV design from China. You know, the first one they've done, they've knocked it out of the park. Extraordinary.
Well, but you know, your bias is towards pretty mediocre, rubbishy cars. Japanese cars, American cars. Cars that sell to the masses.
That, I would say, is a bias that you have been ingrained with. In fact, it is an indoctrination. It's a conditioning that you have had because you've grown up in these surrounds. Where you've grown up to that yuppie period, as you mentioned earlier, where predominantly the cars that people aspired to was German, 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 German. So
but because
like,
they didn't
German
rust,
is the best, and everything
they,
else is like
they
forget
didn't
it.
Rust, and they worked. Japanese cars.
Nothing were, rust now.
Japanese cars. Well, we'll take Lexus for example. Yeah. I recall.
Lexus
that
is a very good example.
I recall that in 1990 is roughly when Lexus.
1990 is when the LS 400 came out.
There you go.
Yeah.
And my. And Lexus showroom was at the Toyota showroom, and what they had done is that in this is in North London, they put a little section to one side and they said, right, we're going to call this Toyota a Lexus, and we're going to fool everyone, and we're going to charge everyone a little bit more money for this car because we've given it leather seats. We know they're leather seats because there's a tag on each seat that says real leather.
No. So this is the thing. So I was in Jeddah in Saudi Arabia at the time. And this Lexus was coming into the market, and rumors had already started. People had already started talking about it. And people were like, well, why are we going to pay Mercedes S-Class money for Toyota? That's literally what people were saying. So the dealership that ran in Toyota in Saudi, which, if I recall correctly, was Abdul Latif Jamil, they did something very clever. He ordered 30 of these cars, and he basically gave them to car people in these communities, to families and car people. He said, just take the car. Take it for a week, 10 days, a month, whatever. Just take it. And to a person, they would take these cars away and they would drive them and they go, oh, whoa, Lexus have just taken it to a whole different level. And this is a reality. In fact, before Lexus, Honda did it with the Legend, but not quite spectacularly. But when Honda did the Legend and Lexus did the Toyota did the Lexus, there were crisis meetings being held at Mercedes and BMW headquarters. They were like, oh my goodness, you know, this thing really has taken it to a whole different level. The refinement, the quietness, the superiority in terms of how the engine revved, how refined it was, how little vibration there was just extraordinary. It was just, I remember driving the car at the time. I reviewed the car and I went out of the car and I was driving and I was like, this thing is just driving itself. It was like, at that time, it felt like an ultra futuristic and modern car. It had a dashboard that was blank until you turned up and suddenly it lit up and you went, whoa, you know. And then you drove off in it and there was barely a sound. It was so refined. The ride was so smooth. It was incredible. So you have to give it credit for what it was. And it was a game changer.
The point I'm trying to make is if a dog's been around long enough, it is an old dog that everyone loves. Okay.
That was a brand new car.
But the point I'm trying to make, and I was trying to make, was that when the Lexus came out, it had absolutely zero personality. It was a complete mishmash of, it was half BMW, half Mercedes, half Audi. Okay?
It wasn't though.
That's my
Mercedes
perception.
You could say they tried to hit because they were targeting it. So let me
continue this thought process through. It was all about personality. A car,
yeah.
Mercedes was never a perfect car, it was just a really well built car. And it had a certain look and it had a certain personality. And a BMW had a certain personality distinct from a Mercedes. And so did an Audi, and if you remember, it was a Passat. It was VW Passat at that time. Every brand had its own personality, had its own tech, had its own look, its own feel, its own smell. They were much more individual horses. Now, sharing of technology, sharing of design, sharing of platforms, sharing of build quality. You don't really find rubbishy cars anymore because every car, even the cheapest car, is built to a certain level.
Yeah, and they're all using very similar components.
So really something truly special is what will stand out. And that's what I'm trying to say.
But to be fair, even back then, I mean, this thing, I think, I'm sure people will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this has got a ZF transmission, which ultimately today, most cars have ZF transmissions, you know, because ZF is the master of transmissions. That's just how it goes sometimes. But going back to the personality thing, and I think...
I mean, look, there's an Aston Martin there. And I'm only pointing because there's an Aston, but it's nothing special. It's a Honda CR-V.
But going back to the personality thing, do you think the personality comes over time? You know, because the Lexus LS, I will grant you that when it came out, it was just a very, very efficient product. But over time, it's developed personality. You know, now there's a cult
following. Because you have imbued it with personality. As I said, if a dog, it's got a story now. Well, if a dog sits around long enough, it has a story. Every car, if it sits around, this piece of rubbish in front of us, if that was buried and dug up 1,000 years later, it will have a story to it. Okay?
It's a Peugeot, right, by the way.
It's a white Peugeot. Okay.
Very good. So anyway, so in the final few minutes of the latest episode of the Ultimate Podcast Machine, what have we actually concluded? Well, what you've concluded, modern cars all suck and have no personality and you can care shit about them. basically.
What I've concluded is because there are
which is
some...
why you don't currently have a car, and you've always had a car. It's astonishing.
I cannot find anything other than.
It really still astonishes me that you still don't have anything. You know,
just not moved. And anything I like is like anything that's modern and seriously good is well out of budget. It's anything I like would be over $600 to $700K.
Right.
In order for me to make a dent in what I like. And that's remarkable. $600 to $700K? Just to get to a Koenigsegg level or a Pagani level?
Oh well, on that note. Let us have your comments, guys. Let us know what you think, and let us know if you want us to do one more of these. I miss my journey.
Hope you enjoyed that video. If you did, please hit the like button and share this video as well if you can. And while you're at it, check out these guys who also sponsor my content. I am deeply grateful to them because it helps me to buy new equipment, put fuel in the cars, and yes, buy a cup of coffee. You can do the same. Just go here or right here on YouTube. Just hit these three little dots down here and click on thanks. Make sure you're signed in first. My content is free, but this is how you can help me keep it that way. I may even send you a gift. Oh, by the way, watch this next.